We have Stefan here with us.
Yeah.
From Rhythm Guiding in Japan, Niseko.
Yeah.
And Stefan, you are the general manager and one of the head, or you are the head guide, right?
I'm the head guide and supervisor of the guiding department at Rhythm. Yeah.
Okay.
That's my job.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Perfect job. Good job.
Yeah. It's fun. It's good. I like it.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Rhythm.
Originally we started as a rental store / retail store, and since 2 years we added a Rhythm Rides to the company, which is a ski school and a guiding company.
Mm-hmm.
We provide lessons on the mountains. Mm-hmm. Here, not just in Niseko, but also the resorts around Niseko, like Ruzutsu, Kidoro,
okay,
Moiwa, etc. Yeah.
And Hakuba as well, right?
Hakuba is a little bit different. It's like organized through Evo. Evo is a company that we partnered up with in the last year. And they asked us to help out with their trips. We sent a guide down for every trip that Evo does in Hakuba or in Miyoko.
Okay.
And
I've seen also a couple of Rhythm shops and rental
stores. True. Yeah. So the stores in Hakuba are, we have two stores in Hakuba.
Mm-hmm.
And they are only doing rentals and retail.
Mm-hmm.
There's no Rhythm Rides there. So there's no, we don't provide there the ad hoc, let's say, ski lessons and guiding products.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we at the moment provide here in Niseko.
Okay.
And the area around Niseko, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So how comes you chose Niseko?
Niseko? Well, it's kind of funny. Like, I finished university, sports university, and mm-hmm. I've been in the ski industry for a long time in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And I've wanted something new. And I remember I was working at a surf company in Spain, and my friend, one of my dearest friends on snowboard in the snowboard industry, asked me, like, hey, what are you going to do next winter?
Yeah.
I got a job for you in Japan if you want.
Okay.
So I said yes to that without actually much knowing about it, only that there's a lot of snow out there.
Okay.
And I wanted to experience that. So I came here originally as an instructor.
Yeah.
And started to explore and do some more courses around here. And I got familiar with the conditions here in Niseko and, Hokkaido, basically.
Uh-huh.
And from there, I started guiding for the same company at the time.
Okay.
Different company I'm working for now.
Okay.
And it was amazing. It's kind of kept me going here. And mainly it's the snow, it's the culture, obviously, the Japanese culture.
Uh-huh.
And, all the lovely friends I made here too.
Uh-huh.
I think we have a really good community here, like a good local community.
Yeah.
And that definitely brings me back all the time.
Okay.
And let me stay here in the pandemic. And it was great.
Cool.
Yeah.
So actually most of our clients, they're either going to Hakuba or to Niseko. Most of them actually to Niseko because that's the most famous one in
right.
Japan.
Mm-hmm.
How would you compare the two different destinations?
Like,
what do you think is the pros and
the cons
about the two different resorts?
Well, like, you know, if we talk about terrain, clearly you can scare yourself a bit more in Hakuba if you want to. Like, the terrain is just much bigger and steeper. I mean, it's proper mountain range. It feels a bit more like the European Alps.
Mm-hmm.
Here we ski and snowboard on volcanoes.
Mm-hmm.
Volcanoes generally are a little bit more gentle, mm-hmm. a bit more friendly to skiers and snowboarders. But if we talk about like consistency of powder snow, like real light powder snow, I would say Niseko has the consistency.
Yeah.
We might not get like the freak dumps that Hakuba sometimes get, you know, like 60 centimeters plus overnight, but we do get those consistent top ups of like 20, 30 centimeters.
Pretty much every day, right?
Pretty much every day. I mean, it snows outside while we speak and it hasn't really been, it didn't really stop for the last few days. Yeah.
Yeah, so actually when we came here, or I was in Hakuba first.
Yeah.
And we just arrived 2 days ago and I've seen the forecast and there was only like basically 5 to 10 centimeters on the forecast every day. But it's a snow machine. It's actually snowing like 20 to 40 centimeters every day since we are here.
Yeah, right?
Is it always like this?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I don't really express this snowfall in like centimeters because it's really hard to say. I just usually say or forecast in like we're gonna get no snow.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that often though.
Mm-hmm.
We gotta get a bit of snow,
mm-hmm.
Or we just get a lot of snow.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of snow can be, you know, 30, but it can be 60. Like. But it's going to be good anyway, if it's 30 mm-hmm. or 60. Basically.
So what do you consider the last 2 days of snowfall? Is that considered
well, I got,
for
I,
you? Or,
yeah, or? we got a weather plot at our guiding company. And mm-hmm. That shows you like the snow for every 24 hours, but mm-hmm. also the storm total.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for this current storm total over the last few days, we mm-hmm. are at like 75 centimeters.
Mm-hmm.
So... It's decent, it's good. Like, yeah, we get bigger dumps sometimes, but I think we are happy with what we're getting right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, I also found like everybody, it's actually my first time to Niseko. Our UX sales team has been here several times.
Right.
They have explored the region since many years, actually. But for me, it was actually the first time. And everybody told me, yeah, it's not as steep and there's shorter runs. But I was still impressed that there are still some like steep pitches, right?
There is, yeah.
And there's also, I mean, yeah, sure, the runouts are a little bit longer, it takes a little bit longer to get out, but it's proper fun for powder skiing.
Yeah, well, I feel like you have to take it a little bit in perspective as well, I guess. Like, it depends where everybody's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, myself, I'm originally from the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
It's as flat as a pancake.
Right.
So for people from the Netherlands that might not always, you know, are in the Alps, this can be quite challenging already, you know, mm-hmm. like or entertaining. Look, you know, with good snow, like, you not necessarily always have to have the steeps. On top of that, it's also not so safe to expose yourself mm-hmm. As much as you can into the steep terrain, because the whole myth that there is no avalanches in Japan, that is absolute it's nonsense. I mean, we have avalanches here pretty much on a daily basis. So that's something I definitely want to tell everybody. It's like, don't think this is a safe place if it comes to avalanches. Mm-hmm. We've still had to take this very seriously here mm-hmm. here in Hokkaido as well.
Mm-hmm.
We might have a very consistent snowfall and wind direction and temperature,
mm-hmm.
but it still means that those snow dragons, as we call them, are still lurking around. And
that was my experience now as well. Like, we did the hike to the top, and we had a guide yesterday. And we were skiing, and the guide was actually quite nervous, and I completely understand, because there were plenty of people and everybody dropping in without taking care at all.
Mm.
And we were going the backbone, I think it's called,
right,
a little bit further to the mm-hmm. right, and there were at the top it was actually a proper avalanche slope.
Yeah, it's all avalanche terrain out there. Yeah.
Right. And so how do you do the guiding here? Like, how do you get away from the people? Because mm-hmm. it is actually quite full, right?
Yeah, it's a busy resort. I mean, it got really popular over the last mm-hmm. few years, and we see a lot of, as we call it, revenge booking this season, mm-hmm. Because people couldn't get here the last few winters. So you really see that everybody wants to be here just straight after they open the borders.
All right.
And that has its effect on the terrain as well.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, we if we talk about, for example, Niseko, which mm-hmm. is the mountain called Mount Anapuri, it's a big mountain with a lot of you can ski 360 degrees basically. In any aspect. So there's a lot of terrain to cover, and if people are willing to go out and find those hidden gems,
mm-hmm.
There's still a lot to explore, which is not where the general public is going to, because they don't know of it.
Okay.
I mean, local knowledge here in Hokkaido is very important.
Yeah.
Not just for keeping you safe, but also to find those little gems.
Right.
obviously we are not all super eager to give everything away, but I mean, if you go out with the right people, with the right guides, they will keep you safe, and they will also bring you to the places where there's going to be a lot of snow left and good powder runs, basically.
So if he hired you, I mean, sometimes we do.
I'm out there. You can see it in my face. I'm out quite a lot.
It's a proper snow bite, right?
2 days ago it was minus 30 with 50k winds, and we kept hiking for about 2 hours to get to where we wanted to come, and like a place where nobody was. And I had to pay a little bit for it, but it was definitely worth it.
So if we hire you for our guests, and they are proper skiers, and they're definitely one of their main concerns, like basically everybody who comes to Japan, they want to have like untracked Japao, right? Would you be able to find that for them if they're willing to hike a little bit?
Yeah, like if you know, the conditions have to line up first, it's safety first. So if I feel comfortable with the snowpack on the day, and I feel comfortable also with the general level of the group. I mean, that's another factor that we have to take in consideration.
Sure.
Solid skiers, fitness has to be on point, gear has to be on point as well. And if we all start to know each other, then we definitely can go to places where we won't see other people around. And
So you would share your secrets then?
I would say I would like to let people experience how it is to ride in my boots, basically. So that's kind of our vision as well. Like, we would like everybody to ride in our boots and deliver an experience that I like to experience myself on my day off, basically.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And what does that mean? Like, I mean, the major runs and all the gates that are here, 4, 5, or 6 they're quite popular, right? Yeah, like everybody drops in there. There's actually a big line, and basically, so from what I've seen the last 2 days is that you have to be either first or it's all tracked, basically.
I'm not completely agreeing with you there.
Maybe I don't have a lot of experience here.
I think there's definitely a lot of people hiking up at the same time. But there's also a lot of people dropping down at the same place. And as I said, like, there's a lot of terrain out there. So if you know your way towards the left, and everybody goes towards the right, you will avoid that traffic.
But what does that mean? Does it always like require you to basically skin out, or?
No. That doesn't, it's not necessary, not always. You know, it all depends on conditions too. I mean, like, how much snow do we get? Is it a bluebird day? Is it a day where you don't know where you're going because it's a whiteout? But if you have the right guide with you, he knows where you're going.
Even in a whiteout, right?
Even in a whiteout. And then it's not far that you need to go to get to those places that, as soon as you get to the trees where the whiteout doesn't matter anymore, you're fine. It's decision making.
So how many person per group do you accept?
Our groups go up to 5 individuals per guide, and currently you can only hire a private guide, so we won't we don't provide like a group setup where we have a group available where people can sign up for and then kind of like share the guide.
So basically it must be a group that is coming together. And
So what we try to eliminate there is that there is a big difference in skill level, which will also make then a big difference in experience. The experience is the most important thing. Look, I don't want to go out with people that I don't know. So that's not how you will ride in my boots. I want to go out there with people that I do know. And that's where we already start from the beginning, by having a private guide, and then the guests can decide themselves with who they're going on the mountain with this particular guide, up to 5 people.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. How much is it to hire a guide for a day?
So we have 2 different type of products. The Niseko guiding for a full day mm-hmm. is at the moment at 65,000 yen
mm-hmm.
for the
day. So that's roughly 450 euros a day.
Yeah, with the currency at the moment, yeah, I would say
just
around
roughly.
That. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. This is including the obviously the guide,
mm-hmm.
But also it includes the avalanche gear
mm-hmm.
And not the avalanche backpack, not the airbag,
mm-hmm.
but definitely a normal backpack with the probe transceiver mm-hmm. and the shovel.
Okay.
That's included in the price. Yeah. And then we have, we call it day trip guided tours, where we will go to different resorts where they have gates mm-hmm. as well, or mm-hmm. really good side country.
Mm-hmm.
There's a transport included,
mm-hmm.
and the day also lasts a bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have obviously the safety equipment in, mm-hmm. included.
Mm-hmm.
This is we offer this on 80,000 yen per day,
mm-hmm.
And then we do the backcountry tours as well, which is all on tour skis and mm-hmm. split boards.
Mm-hmm.
So no lift access,
mm-hmm.
And this is the same price.
Do you do a
Yotei. Yeah, we go under the right conditions with mm-hmm. the right guests that
mm-hmm.
we know.
Mm-hmm.
We go up that mountain as well.
Mm-hmm. How long does it take?
It depends a little bit on the group. Like I have groups that I go up with, and within 4 hours we're up there.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very experienced, mm-hmm. and the conditions are lining up really
mm-hmm.
nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a slog. Sometimes it takes over 6 hours to get mm-hmm. up to the crater.
Mm-hmm.
It depends really on the conditions and on the group. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And obviously proper equipment helps as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of safety protocols, like what do people need to expect here? I mean, it's obviously probably harder if you get in trouble here than in the Alps, where you have a lot of safety protocols and helicopter rescue and all those things. How does it look here?
Yeah, over here, you're a little bit more on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, it's really, you know, we all advise to go with a guide to make sure you don't get in trouble in the first place.
Yeah.
So if it comes to like moments that where people get injured, because that's actually the main problem here in the backcountry, mm-hmm. people that get injured and are not able to are not stable enough basically after their injury to get out by themselves.
Right.
Yeah, that's where we start our own protocols first to make mm-hmm. sure to stabilize the victim.
Yeah.
And first try to get this person safely out with our own within our own organization, because
mm-hmm.
this is just a quicker and at the end a more safe procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're so exposed by the elements here. I mean, it's very cold here,
mm-hmm.
and weather can change real quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's unfortunately not possible, then we will definitely call in the authorities of the mountain safety here in Hokkaido,
mm-hmm.
and they will come and help.
How would they get the victims out of the backcountry?
That's really depending on the situation.
In 1 meter fresh powder.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really depending on the situation, like especially first of all, like where it happened.
Mm-hmm.
What's the injury?
Mm-hmm.
Is there an avalanche involved? How far are we out?
Mm-hmm.
That all depends on that. Like helicopters are pretty rare here to use just because of the terrain and the weather.
Mm.
Like it all sounds very, you know, like dramatic always, like, oh, helicopter, etc. But at the end, it's a lot of risk to use a helicopter to pull somebody out of the backcountry that's injured.
Right. Certainly
so,
with low visibility that you have here.
Yeah, a lot of wind. We have a lot of skiing in tree lines mm-hmm. as well. So there's not like in the Alps where there's a lot of things happening in the Alpine. There's not much place to land mm-hmm. to let this helicopter land safely.
But do you have helicopter rescue here?
It happens, but it really depends on the situation.
And are the helicopters based here, or would they need to fly in from somewhere far?
I would say it's not like that they're on the base of every mountain.
Right.
but they are in a range close enough to to act if necessary.
Okay.
But once again, they take a lot of things in consideration before they let the helicopter fly, basically.
Right. So first thing, you would try to get the people out yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what our guides are all trained for. Mm-hmm. And where we actually spend a lot of time behind the doors, we spend a lot of time training this.
Training.
Yeah. And also we continue this throughout the winter, that nobody is like start to slack, basically.
Is there kind of a federation or association that you need to comply with for rescue protocols?
Look, I don't want to speak for like other mm-hmm. companies, because everybody mm-hmm. has his own protocols, you mm-hmm. know, his own you know, like level of the standards that they want to have if it comes to first aid or like first responding.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely at Rhythm, we like to see everybody having a wilderness first aid responder mm-hmm. Certificate, and also one that's up to date.
Mm-hmm.
And and then besides that, we train on a regular basis scenarios. Mm-hmm. And everybody has you know, everybody within the team has his own, like, you know, specific parts of first responding that are really strong at, and mm-hmm. it's good to share that knowledge with each other and basically get everybody on a higher level of first responding.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Mm. Going one step back again, like escaping the crowds, do you offer cat skiing?
We don't. We don't offer cat skiing, but cat skiing is definitely around. Mm-hmm. There's multiple cat ski operations.
Mm-hmm.
So if people are interested in cat skiing, there's enough
opportunity. So you could organize that as well?
We rather passes on to the actual cat ski operations mm-hmm. and let them organize it directly with the guests.
Mm-hmm.
We think that's better for everybody's experience, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ourselves, we believe in the more in like the backcountry experience, either using lift access or mm-hmm. earning your turns by mm-hmm. Going up on a splitboard or mm-hmm. on the tour skis
mm-hmm.
and have that, you know, and have that experience as well, how it is to basically earn your turns, basically going up there on your own power and, like, you know, embracing the nature as well, because it's super beautiful. I mean, yeah. I find it amazing to walk up and wind down a little bit and get, you know, breathe everything in and, like, realize where you are, because mm-hmm. it's a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, it's Wonderland, huh? You go through the woods here and through the trees and...
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then in comparing dining, nightlife, Hakuba versus Niseko, can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah, so I have a bunch of Japanese friends, and they actually always are very big on the nightlife in Hakuba.
Mm-hmm.
They say that the Hakuba nightlife is very strong, and a lot of famous Japanese DJs go over there, because it's quite close to Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
But I must say that... there's a lot of things going on here at night as well. There's a big nightlife here too, but there might be not so. Well, some of them are, but like there's also some smaller gigs going on that you just hear mm-hmm. while you go out, and it's like, oh, there's something going on there mm-hmm. tonight, and people will hear it while they're going out, and mm-hmm. it might not be so big advertised, but that makes it fun too. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a little bit what you see in Japan in general. Like, try to explore a little bit, like mm-hmm. Where something is going on, and then
right.
some quirky events or like venues that you end mm-hmm. up in, and it's part of the experience, I guess.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. My feeling is that it's much more that there's much more on offer here in Niseko versus Hakuba. No.
I would say like Hakuba is the area where it's called Hakuba Valley, and the valley is very spread out.
True.
So, you know, you can't really like hop bars there so easily as over here, because
mm-hmm.
everything is here kind of centered around the town Hirafu,
mm-hmm.
Where over there everything is, all the venues are a bit more spread out, so mm-hmm. you basically always need like a car, or it's a bit of a walk to mm-hmm. go from A to B. So yeah, doing a bit of a pub crawl or like just after your dinner, walk into like a bar to extend the night, basically. That's a little bit easier, I would say, in Hirafu, because you can do it all by foot. Yeah.
In terms of dining, what do you think is where the difference is?
Well, like Hokkaido is very famous for their quality of food. Like even if you hear about the Japanese, when you talk about Hokkaido, the first thing they talk about is, oh, the food is so good in Hokkaido. And they mainly talk about the seafood. And it has to do with the water temperatures here. The water temperatures around the island are much lower than in the rest of Japan, which creates, for example, more fatty fish. And that's generally seen as like better quality and better taste. We're very close to the harbors here. So we get daily the fresh fish coming in here. And all the dining is definitely taking advantage of that. And so I would say, like, there's a good variety of good food here.
And we have some really good dinners here.
What was your favorite?
Well, we went to the Alpinist, which is raclette.
Not so Japanese.
But it was actually really good quality.
Oh, awesome.
We are here with European tour operators, there's some Swiss tour operators with us, and he is really into dining, and he said he was impressed. And as a matter of fact, they import the cheese from Switzerland, so it is probably it's not Japanese, but it was really good quality. And
did you have to ring the bell? Did you let drop some bread in the fondue?
No, we just had the raclette. The melted cheese. And then yesterday we went to one of the barbecue places where you have a little barbecue on your dinner table.
Oh, the Genghis Khan? So, like, did you go there?
I forgot the name. It's just
down here. Yeah. So was it lamb meat or like?
No, it was a lot of beef.
A lot of beef. Yeah. Oh, right.
Different cuts of beef, and it's like amazing. And then Japanese style of
awesome.
Preparing it, and with miso spread and like spicy and
proper fine dining.
It was really, really good.
Nice. Excellent. That's awesome.
Just
one advice I would say, if you want to experience all the restaurants here, they are very popular, and they will get booked out. So I would always recommend to make reservations up front, and maybe even if you're not even maybe even a few weeks or as soon, actually, you know, when you come over here,
so you
to make a reservation, so you make sure you got your table.
Okay.
Because places here have high quality food, but it means that the kitchen is not that big,
right?
So they can't serve as many tables,
right?
So I would definitely recommend that.
And in terms of standard and clientele, my feeling is that Niseko area is much more upscale. Nicer accommodation
compared to
hotels compared to Hakuba. Would you confirm that, or what's your takeaway there?
Look, there's a lot of new development here. A lot of big hotels that over the last few years have been built, and they do focus a lot on the, well, we call it like the new Asian market, like for a lot of Asian countries, it's ski and snowboarding is quite new, and they all want to, have a piece of it. And they're getting really attracted to those big hotels. But there's still some really cute Japanese accommodations around here.
Okay.
And they're often also a little bit more, a bit better price, I would say, bit more fair price, let's say, like that.
Right.
But if you want to live real close to the lift, like almost ski in, ski out, then you will end up in those more upper class big hotels here. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much, Stefan. It was actually great talking to you.
Okay.
And
likewise.
Since you have a great operation running.
Thank you.
And looking forward to do more with you in the future. For our guests.
Awesome.
Just as a quick wrap up, three USPs for Niseko, three USPs for Hakuba. Could you sum it up? Like, what's the, just as bullet points?
Like, why would you come here? You
mean,
well, like, Niseko, obviously, for the snow.
20 meters a year.
Something like that on average. Right. Definitely for the food as well. I mean, food is amazing here. And I would say it's just a whole new experience, like winter sport experience.
Yeah.
Nothing you can compare with like the European Alps, for example.
So, right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's definitely unique.
Why would you go to Aqaba?
Why would I go to Aqaba? If you wanna, you know, ride some bigger lines, feel a little bit more familiar. I mean, feel a little bit more you're like actually in mountains like the European Alps. I would definitely recommend to go to Aqaba. There will be more bluebird days as well, like nice weather days. That's definitely if you prefer to have, besides the amount of snow, also some good weather days. I would definitely recommend to go to Aqaba. And the access to Aqaba is definitely easier. You fly into Tokyo, you take the bullet train, and you're basically there. Whereas to here, you need to take another flight. There's no bullet train here. The journey from the airport to Niseko can be a bit more challenging. So yeah, that's definitely a plus there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. Thanks for the summary. Thanks for the call.
Not later. Yeah, nice to meet you.